So tonight I'd like to talk about wisdom and compassion. And I think it's a good time to talk about in the series of the class, because we've been learning to observe more clearly, more carefully, and also more kindly, you know, observing whatever our experience might hold. You know, just simple instructions. Notice sound, don't add anything to the sound. Notice the sensation without adding anything to it. Noticing an emotion as they arise. And you simply meet that as clearly as you can without adding anything to that, with more allowance. And we start to, as we do that, especially this time in the class, we start to feel almost this underlying mass of stuff that hasn't been felt for a while. Like an iceberg, you know, iceberg has a little bit on the top. There's much more under the surface that's unseen. And same too with ourselves. We start to actually provide the best environment to start to observe that iceberg. So we start to probably be simply meditating with our breath and our body. And we start to feel, okay, there's anger, there's fear, there's sadness. There's different tensions we're starting to arise. It's almost like a backlog of unacknowledged things which are starting to come up from the surface. Now, how we meet that is important. You know, partly this time in the class, understanding that's actually a sign of things deepening, a sign of things progressing and maturing in the practice. Because if you don't realize that, it's easy to get discouraged, to say, okay, it's not working. You know, I didn't realize that I was never angry before I took the class. But what you're actually finding is the anger that's always been there. It's starting to become revealed. Right. So the good news is that it's not going to make you more angry by tuning into it. It's actually going to allow you to understand it in a deeper way. So it's not so much driving you. Now, how we relate to those difficult things that arise, we tend to either go into one default or another. You know, this is very general. Sometimes we go more into our heads, you know, our ideas, our mental way of relating to it. We try to problem solve the analytical. Other default, again, this is generalization. Sometimes we go into feeling it too much to the point we feel overwhelmed, that it starts to wash us off our feet. We find a sense of sensitivity becomes more than I can bear in this, what's revealing itself. And so whatever default we might have tends to throw us off balance. And so that's why I want to talk about the wisdom and compassion as a way of regaining, refining that balance. Now, this sense of wisdom and compassion, sometimes we talk about it as these two wings that need to be fully alive, fully embodied for the bird to fly. I like to think of it also as a tree. Now, we look at a tree outside. The tree has a deep root system, which is anchored in the earth. Let's say that's the wisdom component. And while the trees, the blossoms, the branches, the foliage is part of the expression of the compassion, the tree needs both to thrive, to really exist. If one's out of balance and the other, the tree will not be so strong and healthy. And so how do we find that balance? So first of all, let's talk about when we're in balance with wisdom. And actually, when I say wisdom, I'm using that in a particular way. Usually we think of wisdom as maybe book learning or a set of knowledge or a set of how to problem solve. In this case, I'm talking about wisdom as direct seeing, direct knowing of how things actually are. Okay, so it's not so much the ideas around it, but the actual direct felt sense of it. While knowledge is more the ideas, the concepts, you know, the problem solving, which again has its role, has its purpose in our lives. And so when we kind of have that as a bias of more into our minds, we have to learn how to bring it into our hearts. There's a story I like to share about my grandfather when he was dying from cancer. And he was on hospice at this time, and I was able to spend some time with him during the last month or so of his life. And he was a Christian man. And I remember early on in this process, he said that this phrase that this too shall pass is often held as a very important term, or important, maybe the most important phrase in the Bible. And I could tell that him thinking about that and reflecting on that brought a sense of ease to him. But then a few, maybe a week later or so, he wanted to shave. He hadn't shaved for a while. And so he kind of cleared the hallway and took his wheelchair down to the bathroom so he could see his face and shave. And I remember him seeing his reflection, and the first thing he said is that me? Is that really me? Because his body had deteriorated over the last time he had seen himself. And he didn't say this, but I could see right then there was a whole different understanding that this too shall pass. You go from this idea, this concept that this too shall pass, to seeing the physical reality that, oh, this body shall pass. This body is also in a state of flux. So you see the movement from the idea, the thoughts around it, into the felt sense of it, the actual experience of it. Do you see how that echoes what we've been talking about tonight and throughout the class? We're so loaded into our intellect, our minds. Again, we create this room. The university is right here. We all have ways that we use our minds very powerfully in our world, shaping minds as a teacher. This is all very important. And there's this whole other element of the heart, of compassion, that's often underdeveloped and needs to have that sense of balance with this. And so this often feels like a movement from our head into our heart. We don't forget how to problem solve. We don't forget our power over our minds. We're just regaining or discovering, reclaiming really, this other capacity of the heart's relationship, the immediacy of this moment. And then we can also be out of balance the other way, that we tend to get really sensitive. We really feel other people's pain and feel that sense of almost too much empathy, that being overwhelmed by the sorrows, the pains of the world. And so learning how to find that balance helps that tree have that bedrock, that root. Now, this one is often, one teacher described it. She was actually on a retreat herself. And at the end of the retreat, she was talking to her teacher and just saying, okay, I'm so opened up from the retreat. You know, this practice of just meeting my breath, meeting my sensations, really opened my heart. But I start to open to the pain of the world and it feels overwhelming. I feel kind of like I can't hold it. And her teacher said, well, you're open in the front. You're receiving everything, but you're not allowing it to pass through you. So as you feel something, it's like there's a way that you kind of contract or glob onto it instead of allowing it to flow through you. So his suggestion, and many people found this helpful, is to open in the front, but also open equally in the back. So as we sit here even, you can experiment with that. Having that openness of the chest, but also imagine between your shoulders is also open. So it's almost like you're a permeable membrane that as something like sorrow comes in, it's felt, but it's allowed to pass through. Like the wind going through the branches of the tree doesn't try to grasp onto that. It feels it, it's moved by it, it's affected by it, but also allows it to pass through. So how, you know, that's a nice visualization, I think is very helpful. Part of, the trick, though, is that the sorrow, the pain, the suffering has such a strong personalization to it. We make a story around it. The meaning is so draws our attention. So here's another way to work with that. And this is something I learned from my teacher. I don't know if he said this, but he had us do this exercise that taught me this. So we're doing a year-long practice around death and dying as a spiritual practice. And so each month we would meet and, you know, have homework to work with and kind of bring ourselves from that initial fear around our own mortality to actually understand it as a way of opening to the stillness of the moment. So one of those exercises was to go to a graveyard and to look at all the gravestones, you know, across the landscape and reflect on all the pain, all the sorrow, all the tears that have been shed by those people who've lost those loved ones. And so by doing that, I started to go from my own personal pain to realize, oh, you know, you're going to feel that or have felt that. You have, and you will, and you will. And I started to realize, well, this is not just my own pain. This is a pain that's been shared by all people. And as I expanded that even further to all the graveyards throughout the world, throughout time, it stopped being my personal pain and more just the pain that allows that pain, that suffering to be felt, but also to pass through, to shift through without that personalization. So this is part of the play that we learn, is how to attend to the personal, the details, but at the same time also holding it with a spaciousness, with really a true quality of love that is unconditional, the unconditional quality of affection. Okay, you can be here and you cannot be here, and this is perfectly fine. And so this way the balance of wisdom and compassion starts to come back in. Now, one thing that came up around a question is a teaching of the second dart. So this is a little graphic teaching from the Buddhist time that if you were walking around and for some reason someone shot you with a dart, with a little arrow, we would all feel pain, whether we had never practiced meditation or we had practiced it for many, many years. There will be a certain measure of pain that everyone will feel. It doesn't matter if you're the Buddha, whether you're fully enlightened, if you're just, you know, Joe somebody off the street, you're all going to feel that same level of pain. The difference is what we add to that pain, how we magnify it. Remember last week I talked about my kidney stone attack and how I added the suffering to it by my resistance and my mental proliferation around it. And so this, we can do this both with going into the imbalance of too much knowledge, too much wisdom, or into too much feeling, too much emotionality. Both of those can amplify what we're feeling. Okay, so part of what we're learning, how, let me just feel this directly. What's here in the most simple, direct way? Part of this is learning how much we add to it. See, oh, I've added this to this moment. Can I release that? Can I relax around that? Actually see what's the essence of this sensation, this experience. Now, to help kind of ground and round out this little talk, I'm going to share a poem that really teaches this balance of wisdom and compassion, and how wisdom is really supported by compassion, and compassion is actually really supported by wisdom. So I'll read it and then speak a little bit about it. It's called Kindness by Naomi Shihab Nye, who's a Palestinian poet and Arab American. Kindness. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment, like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved. All this must go so you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. How you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop. The passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and a simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness is the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to gaze at bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, it is I you have been looking for, and then goes with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend. So this poem is, you know, I love to teach from this poem because it just naturally brings that balance of wisdom and compassion together. You know, seeing that when the future dissolves in a moment like salt in a weakened broth, you know, we counted and carefully saved, see all that falling away. This is those times when we expected something to continue on and that relationship ended, that diagnosis came in, we lost something that was very dear to us. How the mind expects things to continue on and on. That's that future dissolving in the moment, like salt in a weakened broth. And then understanding, almost going into that quality of sorrow, you know, seeing how that sense of mortality, of seeing someone who's passed away, and how this too could be you, you know, how we all share that fate. That often is a powerful way, and a strong way, but also a very beautiful way to bring immediacy to, okay, what's here right now? Just like how my grandfather realized, okay, this is actually really happening. Going from the abstract, a little bit, bit by bit, gradually accommodating this reality that his life was coming to an end. And that before you know kindness is the deepest thing, you must know sorrow is the other deepest thing. This is going into that, seeing how the commonality of suffering is shared by all humans. And how we all share that experience. As we start to realize that, and realize, okay, it's not just me who's experiencing this. We start to relax in some way. We see the size of the cloth, and then kindness is the only thing that makes sense anymore. Kindness is that balance of wisdom and compassion. And then it goes with us everywhere, like a shadow or a friend. All right, if we could just sit quietly for a few moments, let those words settle where they will.